Welcome, friends, to the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye podcast, brought to you by your 26-year listening veteran, Jessica. Join me as we celebrate these enduring gifts, the songs of Marvin Gaye. In each episode, I will share insights about the music and recount life experiences tied to it. I'm hoping to inspire you to take a first or your 500 first listen to these songs that are truly the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye.
Okay, so the song that I'm going to cover next from Hear My Dear is I Met a Little Girl. You know, I kind of feel like I'm going to go in song order for this album. It just has a really interesting flow. Marvin's decision, you know what I mean? And it makes a lot of sense. So we go from his introduction to the project, the song Hear My Dear, the title of the album, into really the backstory, right? Which is I Met a Little Girl. And I don't know, I've always kind of marveled at the title, because Anna was 17 years older than him, but he calls her a little girl, right? It's like that title kind of makes you wonder, like, is this story about Anna or is it a little bit more general? But I think it's very, very much about Anna. So I will say, I was thinking about the impact that this song began to have on me, like when I really began to connect to this song. And it was in college. And that's what I enjoy sharing insight on Marvin Gaye's music with you guys. I want to go to how this specific song first took on such an impact to me personally, where it was like I finally had this much deeper connection to this song than I had ever had. Now, mind you, my very first episode on this album, I'm explaining I'm 14 years old. I'm sitting at my kitchen table doing my homework. And it was not until I was 19. I was a sophomore. I was living in my first apartment off campus. And I had met this girl. I told you about this girl. She just became my friend because we had this connection on Marvin Gaye. She had her own separate knowledge of Marvin Gaye. And that was really what just kind of drew us in friendship. Because like her knowledge of Marvin Gaye was very personal and important to her too. And so I remember literally this was a conversation one time, and I think like she posed the question and it was like, what is your favorite Marvin Gaye song? And I know the way that I answered that for her is the way that I've answered it for this podcast for 29 episodes so far. It's like, I can't say that I don't have a favorite Marvin Gaye song because it doesn't feel right to put one above the others. But she had one. And of everything in Marvin's catalog, her favorite song was I Met a Little Girl. And now when she came at me with that, right away my head was turned to the side a little bit. And I just had to kind of really think about that. But then she explained and she was just like, no, it's just the story. She was like, it's just the story. That is like such a deep love song. For her, it really is the message of the song, the lyrics, the story that he's telling, the heartbreak associated with it. She was very pro Marvin and Anna, you know what I mean? So like she knew the whole situation, and that's why I'm saying, like, it's exciting to share insight with you guys on Marvin Gaye songs, because I hope that it can have that same type of a effect on you that it had on me. I swear, So by this point, like I said, I've had 5 years of this song underneath my belt. It's never really resonated very deeply with me before. It would never be on a list. You know what I mean? It was just a song in the flow. I didn't dislike it, but I did not have a deep connection to it the way this girl did. It was her favorite Marvin Gaye song. And so when somebody is just able to break it down to you, like they have their explanations to you for why you need to understand this song this way. It was like, wait a minute, okay. And so then I came onto that song, like the first time that I listened to it after having this conversation with her, and I was getting the song, the way with like the impact that she understood it. It was a different thing. And then, so I have explained, it was like, oh, there's a song, the most of Marvin's, that I can't just listen to anywhere. You know what I realized is that doesn't apply anymore. I'm so glad to be so much more grown and just move past certain past situations. You know what I mean? But so before I was as far moved past a past situation, you know what I mean? It was during that time. It was when it was more fresh. It was when it was more fresh out of a situation. That was the time frame that this specific song, I Met a Little Girl, could just send me into a little temporary 5 minute and 3 second long breakdown, because that's how long this song is. I'm looking at it in Spotify right now. And, you know, it was just because there was such a relation to the song, to my personal life. And I think, like, in a way, it's kind of been a plague. I'm going to use that word to explain it, because I've told you, and I kind of is a plague in this day and age to go about seeking out love relationships from a Marvin Gaye music perspective. It's just, I don't know that I have the audience. You know, I don't know that I have the pickings available much in my, maybe it's my geographic territory. I don't know what, but you know what I mean? It's just like, I have not come across the winner, winner, chicken dinner. You know what I mean? Candidate that just is going to, give me experiences that resemble Marvin Gaye songs. You know what I'm saying? And in a way, that is kind of a plague. Just because it's like what I say, it's almost, it's kind of like a handicap, but it's a good one to have. You know what I mean? It's like you have the right expectations. You have the right things that you're seeking out of a potential partner. You have a certain level of stepping up to a plate to match your efforts, that it is your absolute divine right, because you're not here to be abused by anybody. You're not here to be disregarded by anybody, right? So as long as you want to offer up your love to anybody, you have absolutely every right to expect return for your investment. And so it's kind of a plague because, but it's a good one to have. It's kind of a handicap, but it's the correct one to have. You know what I mean? It's like, if I'm handicapped, I'm handicapped in a way that is the way it should just be. And it's like, yeah, if I'm not finding a match, then it's like, don't let go of the standard. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I say it's a plague because I'm never letting it go. You know what I mean? It first came into my life in the very formative of love expectation years for myself. And I'm never letting it go. I'm never letting go the ideals that are so beautifully and expressionistically expressed, right? Just so expressively expressed in all of Marvin's catalog. That is so important and made so much more poignant and has such more of an impact coming from a man. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm sorry, a man was able to do it. Marvin Gaye was able to do it. He was able to speak, sing beautifully these words. And there's not a word of them ever that he sings that you don't feel has complete meaning and purpose and value and like accuracy. And you know what I'm saying? Like, it's coming from truth, from Marvin. It's how he's singing it. That's one thing that I have heard from multiple of producers that work with Marvin. Mainly, I'm thinking of Ashford and Simpson and Smokey Robinson. You know, through the course of this podcast, I've seen video interviews of the two parties explaining Marvin's ability to like adapt a song to his own, you know, like he puts the Marvin touch on it. He's able to interpret a song. That's the reason why it's like, it doesn't really matter if Marvin wrote the song. If Marvin gets the material, he's able to put his own touch on it. It's really not in an arrogant way what Marvin meant from that interview in 1976 when the guy asks him, did you ever feel a certain type of way that, you know, producers at Motown would cut a song on you and then they might cut it on multiple other people, the exact same song. And he's like, no, it doesn't matter to me. You know, whoever else records it, if I recorded it, I'm good with that because I know that, well, he said he was head and shoulders above the rest. And there's no arrogance about that, but he is. And I'm not going to say was because it's is. But it's like he just was known for his ability to put a flair on a song, just interpreting it in his own way, bringing his own life to a song. And so that's what I really just have never really been concerned with, whether or not the song was written by Marvin Gaye or not, as long as Marvin Gaye delivered the song. And instances where I do know of a specific song that I'm hearing Marvin sing that it's actually been made more famous by other people. So examples of that from the Rare Live and Unreleased volume of the Marvin Gaye Collection, that's where you get a really good sampling of some songs that were made popular during those days by like huge other artists, even outside of Motown. But here comes Marvin putting a version of it together. Prime example, really proud example that I have, and I was able to just share that with you guys for the Christmas season. I made actually 5 videos, but there is one in particular that is a very popular Christmas. It's the Christmas song. That's literally the title of it. And it's much more known by Nat King Cole. But if you hear Marvin's version of that, it is absolutely beautiful. Oh, it's always been my favorite Christmas song. I was always so proud every year, you know, that we would have our little Christmas holiday dinner get together, a big family gathering. And of course, you know, it's like a party. So we've got Christmas music playing and everything. And I was always so proud that out of all of Marvin's catalog, I could just handpick, perfectionistly pick a perfectionist, perfect, totally applicable little contribution to the music rotation for the night. And it was always like so well received because it was just, it's perfect. It's a totally known Christmas song and Marvin does his own beautiful rendition of it. But other songs on that collection, volume 3, because that the Christmas song is on volume 3. He did My Girl. He did It's Not Unusual, which was made real popular by, I think his name is Tom Jones. Sunny. It's just, you know, there's several cuts on there that, of course, you know, the My Girl, that's like the Temptations' most popular song, but he did it too. So, but it always sounds completely different from other renditions that you've heard out there. So, yeah, that was totally what Marvin was able to do. But that's what I'm saying. It's like the message specifically of I Met a Little Girl. That resonated so deeply with this friend of mine who just for the, you know, 5 years into having this song underneath my belt, she was turning me on to just like paying so much closer attention to the message that Marvin is singing in this song. And it's just a complete arced story and it's so deep and it's so meaningful, right? And it's just such, a guide for, you know, life through relationships, love relationships. So particularly the line in the song that really resonated with me. And I think is why it was years later, I will say. So 19, I got an appreciation for the song, right? I got an ability to hear the song in a deeper, more impactful way. Well, then, like I said, this longest relationship or whatever comes into play a couple years after that. And it was just, you know, it was like a, I use that word, the term perfect storm. I just, to me, that means when it's like circumstances are just right in your life for a situation to have the impact on you that it does. Will I ever, here's one thing I want to
clarify. I will never categorize that relationship as the love of my life, because if that was the case, yikes.
I mean, my mindset of what that situation represented, it just was something that was very significant, and it lasted for a very long time in my life, and it had a very deep impact. But, you know, not in a lot of positive ways. So, and honestly, you know, where I'm at the age of 40 with that is not a dig on that man, boy. Because it really just goes to the somewhat sort of philosophy that I try and share with you guys, is that, you know, it has more to do with you. It had more to do with me. It had more to do with the perfect storm set of circumstances of where I was at that exact moment in life, with only the abilities that I had as far as like my knowledge of myself, my knowledge of my unhealed wounds, right? And that with definitely those raging, like very infectious, you know, they are like debilitating wounds. Think of your wounds like that, people. Like, until you have the diagnosis of them and you have an understanding of where they're coming from and kind of how to get at trying to heal them, they're just glaring. They are the elephant in the room. You know what I mean? And that's exactly what they are, because they're unacknowledged, but they are completely running the show. And so you're only going to have as much success as you can have with those types of wounds going on. Do you know what I'm saying? It would be like, I'm just going to use a metaphor and an analogy. I don't ever know the difference between an analogy and a metaphor, but it would be like, you know, if you had gotten your leg chopped off, but now you're trying to run like Usain. What is that guy's name? Usain Humboldt or whatever. The guy from Jamaica, fastest guy in the world. You know what I mean? Like, if your leg is chopped off, that's a glaring, debilitating inability that you have, but yet you are setting out to try and run that 100-meter race against like the fastest person in the world. But you actually absolutely do have an expectation that you're in the race, right? You're only going to be able to have as much success carrying those wounds that you aren't acknowledging yet as you're going to be able to have. Good luck with that race. You know what I mean? So yeah, the relationship was my longest, and it was very impactful, and it was very significant, and it's not in a very positive way, not much of it in a very positive way, but that's not in these days so much a dig on that boy, as there is nothing more that could have been achieved successfully out of that situation, given my debilitating wounds, unhealed wounds that I was just freshly, just, they were glaring elephants in this situation. But elephants in the room in this situation. There is a line in the song that really I related to. It really was a moment that happened for me. It really was like a place that this relationship got to on my part towards that other person. And then, like I say, once that relationship was ended and, you know, that was kind of fresh and the wounding was fresh, that's what made this song have that ability to give me this little 5-minute and 3-second breakdown. I've got the song paused right now at 1:52, and I know I haven't come across the line yet. So actually, I'm going to play this. I'm going to do this song for you guys the way that I've done the last one, and the way that I've decided that I will be trying to do these episodes on songs is by real time trying to listen to the song, get a little bit of the lyrics and, you know, seconds of the song under my belt, pause, come and reflect on exactly what I've just heard, because it needs to be very specifically tied to the song. So what I was saying is it's at a minute and 52 seconds right now. I know I haven't heard the line yet that used to most resonate for me. Just kind of like an experience that I had in my own personal life that just all of the more made this song, you know, years even after I had started to fully appreciate it, just take such a more significant and deep personal meaning in my life. Which then, too fresh out of that relationship, just made it destroy my heart. So let me pause and I'll come back to you once I've heard that line. Okay, so it's at about like 1:45-ish. Well, maybe a little bit before that, but he's like, one night after we made it and we were through, that's when I decided I wanted to marry you. There is a moment of realizing that that's your involvement, that's your investment in a situation, right? That's a very poignant moment that you come to, possibly, you know, in a situation with somebody else where it's like, you realize that this person right here is the one that you could want to see yourself with just, you know, unendingly. And there, you know, that's an important moment. It's like a turning point moment, right? And so it's, and especially then if you get to that place with somebody, because you don't get to that place with everybody, right? If you get to that place with somebody, that's where I have explained this in relationships episodes past. It's like you get some ultimate goals that you start to set. And so it's like, it just the way that he said that, and it's a beautiful, one night after we made it and we were through, that's when I decided I wanted to marry you. And it's like, wow. So, you know, you can visualize that. That's a little story right there in itself. And it's a special moment, right? Like it's a place that you've reached in a relationship with somebody. And so if you get to that place, that's a very ultimate goal place that you get to with somebody. You start to set some ultimate lifelong goals with that person and you become in it to win it. You're checked in at that point, right? Like you have these highest expectations. Should something come into play that can, you know, flip that up on its head, it's going to cause some devastation. And, you know, that just might be inevitable. But yeah, that has always been the line, kind of the most that I personally resonated with in the song, because I definitely just for myself could pinpoint that exact moment that happened for me, kind of in that exact scenario. But what I just realized too is that by I'm this far into the song, I've passed over several really important, I think, well, one is very, I think the most autobiographical expression that we hear Marvin Gaye using his singing voice to provide to us of his life story. This is deep, right? Good gosh. Well, we just, you know, we know the ending. We know the ending of Marvin's life, and we know how that came to be. And that's a very easy to pass judgment on it situation, right? And I've always puzzled on this because I just know how open Marvin's heart was. I'm going to say it like this. There's no way that we got to the day that we got to April 1st, right? And that the dynamic of that family situation was not something completely under Marvin's belt in a way, you know what I'm saying? That he just didn't fully completely know. And that's the thing that becomes really quite sad sometimes, especially, you know, that's what I think it kind of really starts to sink in at the age of 40. I think that unhealthiness in family relationships, I
I think that maybe at the age of 40, they become possibly, it depends on parties' involvements, but possibly at this kind of an impasse place. I don't know that they're going to be resolved. It like I said, it depends on both parties' parts. But if both parties are kind of just settled into the unhealth, boy, by the age that, let's call it the younger party, is at the age of 40, into the 40s, I think there's a strong potential that those things are just going to be the way that things play out. And so what I'm saying is that there's no way that we got to April 1st and Marvin just didn't completely understand what was at hand there. You know, and I don't think it boils down to anything other than the dad was sick and twisted and didn't love his son, point blank. I just don't think that we see much evidence of that prior. You know, that's like the really strong opposing argument to that. But that's where the judgment comes in. You know what I mean? And then that's what I, if I go back and I say, I puzzle at, dude, like in this day right now, 2019, the last week of 2019, I don't know if Marvin Gaye wants me to have that thought process toward observing how his life came to an end. I really don't know if Marvin Gaye wants me having a negative view on his father. I don't know that. Something tells me that he just would have wanted love to be the thing that prevailed in the people that were left behind after he left, you know, and including his father. I don't know if Marvin would want us to judge his father. I'm not at all trying to encourage you not to if you do. What I'm saying is, I don't know. I could see it as Marvin not having a problem with that, but I could also just, something tells me possibly he wouldn't have wanted that. You know what I mean? But let's put that aside and I want to go a little bit deeper into what I'm talking about here. It's that, you know, there was an unhealth in that dynamic no matter what. That unhealth is what allowed that situation to transpire. And there, like I say, there's just no possible way that by April 1st, 1984, that Marvin Gaye wasn't fully aware of the dynamic that existed between him and his father. And so I kind of just feel like the most autobiographical line about what that dynamic consisted of, because that's the thing. It's like, I don't really know if, if I can give you one take just succinctly on this David Ritt's Divided Soul, The Life of Marvin Gaye, I feel like it's kind of sloppily written. I know I've told you that. I've told you my takes on him so many times, and I don't mean to like say that as this harsh criticism of the book, except for that, like I explained a couple episodes back, I knew that I had heard something about how Marvin had been threatened with jail time around the divorce proceedings with Anna, and I wanted to get to that exact context in the book. And I told you that I spent half an hour plus reading through four chapters, and there's so many just kind of little, in my opinion, okay, disconnected little paragraphs of text. So like right now I'm reading like a two-line paragraph in on a page, and I can guarantee you that that little two-line paragraph really doesn't have much to do with the paragraph before it or the paragraph after it. That's kind of my critique of this book, is that it's very hard to read it as like a cohesive, just even on a page, like a page does not consist of cohesive, just sequential information. And so I don't recall deeply, clearly in like a continuous couple of pages of context coming from Marvin, getting an understanding and a very like graphic explanation from Marvin of the dynamic between him and his dad. And kind of obviously how that started from day one, right? Like that's the experience throughout childhood. It just continues to intensify throughout adulthood. And then kind of as I'm experiencing now in my own personal circumstances, you know, like I said, by the time that I'm now in this 40s, it's like things that don't work. I think they're kind of intensifying in their degree of not working. Like it's intensifying in the way that it doesn't work for me. And I'm just, it's like, it's, I think the only thing is that it's fully aware. You know what I mean? I'm fully aware of it. I know the other parties are fully aware of it, and I don't really see the resolution to it. So, but there's the lifelong history of like where they're all coming from. And so, but here's what I also just kind of feel that Marvin was coming from to have had himself in that circumstance on April 1st, 1984. I think that kind of what I just seem to get from Marvin Gaye, which is different than me, is he never really stopped trying. I feel like he never really gave up hope. That was his father, and his father was supposed to love him. And so, you know what? When his mom became sick, he just felt best to be in the household. Now, you know, whatever he was bringing into the household did not jive and work for the parents, and rightfully so. That's just where Marvin had gotten to in life. It's a fact, right? Like, we've already discussed that. That's episode 8, Flying High in the Friendly Sky. I told you it was his. That's also, like, one of the most autobiographical sharings that Marvin shared with us. And definitely from 71 to where he was on, you know, the days, the weeks, the months before April of 84. Let's call it 84. Well, he only had 4 months into 84. By where he was in the 84, it was as bad as it got. And I've often sat and wondered, and I know I expressed this kind of as soon as I finished this book, just independent of what actually went down, it's like, how much longer, I wonder, would Marvin have been able to live the way he was living? You know, it was really, really bad. So, but there was this hopefulness. There was this thought process that Marvin had that was his family. That was his family home. Yes, he had paid for that home. So, you know, he had the right to be there in his mind like that. But I don't think that Marvin was coming with I'm inserting myself into the situation like that. Like, I'm entitled to be here just because this is my home. I know that he appreciated that was where his parents were living, but I think he wanted to just be close to his parents. And I really just think that he wanted this situation to ultimately someday, by the time that they would have come to part each other's company, that could have been something that they could have worked out and resolved. And just, you know, if maybe dad was passing away first, and, you know, maybe there's a deathbed scenario to that, and, you know, we're holding hands and, you know, just riding this out, but that love could be expressed. You know what I mean? I definitely think that the love deep down was there on Marvin's part towards his father. And so I just feel like there was this hopefulness of ultimately someday about that, that Marvin had, that had him actually in the proximity of where he was for that situation to happen on April 1st. And that's what I'm saying. That's opposite of me. I'm at this place at 40 where it's like, I can't, you know, I am not putting myself in that proximity. You know what I mean? Like, I am not, I'm at a place, and I just think it's kind of more where the collective is in this day and age, where it's like, you know what? If it's toxic, it doesn't work. And I'm not subjecting myself to it. I'm not putting myself in the proximity of that. You know, it's if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And if it's kind of, we're here, I'm at 40 and you got that many more years on me and this doesn't work out better than this. When are we working this out? You know what I mean? I don't know that we are. And that doesn't equate to like, oh, okay, so if I just don't put myself in the proximity of it, that like I have bad wishes towards you and I want bad things to happen. Not at all. You know what I mean? I do believe like in these family situations, you deep down do have love for those people. But it's just like, if it's not doing anything but causing you harm, I'm just more of the mind, I'm not putting myself in the proximity of it. I clearly what Marvin's mindset was is that I think he had enough hope and just wanted to be available and open to it that he was in proximity of it. And so kind of the most autobiographical line that I really feel I've ever heard in his catalog describing just that whole entire dynamic. And it's the way that he sings it, but he says, you know, prior to a minute and 46 where I have it paused here, most of my life I had been all alone. And when you just kind of think about that, as lovable as a person as Marvin Gaye seemed to be, right? Didn't it just, I don't see how you experience Marvin Gaye's catalog and a lovability of him doesn't really come through. When you're a pretty lovable person, you know what I mean? And you have really felt most of your life that you've been all alone. And he's also singing this song in sequence, right? He's singing this song up to the point of meeting Anna, and we have discussed that he was 21 when he met her. Now, I did, guys, I know, it's like, Jessica, you need to get your, somewhat of your facts together here if you're going to be talking about Marvin's life. It's like, when did he marry Anna? Hold on, let me look that up really quick so I can give you that exact information. Okay, so June of 1963, and it's, you know, dates can go all the way around in different little sources that you get information from. So it was giving a little bit of additional detail, but I don't think that that's accurate. So, but June of 63 is when they were married. And so, hold on, because you know, I don't do math. He was 24 when they got married. So he's explaining this song, like, up to the point of meeting Anna. Well, okay, let me just put this into context. This little Wikipedia thing that I just said I don't think is accurate because it said they had a three-year courtship, which would have made that 1960 that they met, but that makes Marvin not as old as I've heard that he was. I don't know. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't know. I always heard it that he was 21. So, but anyway, let's go by that age, 21. I met a little girl. Talking about when he meets her, 21. By the time of 21 years of life, if the caption that you give to your life, the content of your life, is that most of your life you've been all alone, well, that speaks to your childhood, right? Because 21, you're just barely grown out there on your own. So you've really had your childhood behind you at that point, and that's it. If your caption is going to be that you've mostly been all alone, sure, that can refer to your social, you know, abilities among your peers. But it probably has a lot to do with family experience, too. And so if your take on kind of your family experience is that you've been alone, that's those dynamics that probably play through to years to come from there. You know what I mean? So I just really, the way that he sings that line and just kind of, like I said, just because we know the end of the story, I really just have always very touched. I feel so touched when I hear him singing that line because it's the way that he sings it, and it's just, it's got this deeper context to it that I think is just speaking to what we saw play out. Okay, then, prior to a minute and 46, here is another, oh, this is just kind of a relationships in general best practice tip. Like, I love relationships best practice tip. He said, and everything I did seemed to please you. Nothing could go wrong. It seemed everything I did seemed to please you. Hold on, let me get into these little supposed lyrics here in this little booklet I've got. Yeah, most of my life I had been all alone. Nothing could go wrong, and it seemed everything I did seemed to please you. All the heartaches you hid. Don't do that in your relationships, period. With loved ones, your lover, whatever. Good gosh. Speak your peace. Let your heartaches be known that people inflict upon you. You know what I mean? There's nothing more deceitful in a way. Because, oh, you know, when are you finally going to let somebody know what they're doing that doesn't work for you, that's actually causing you heartache? That's where I go back to what I'm saying, people, is that nobody is put here. You're not put here to be dealt nothing but kind of heartache after heartache from someone else. Oh, but you just need to take that from that person without being able to express, like, hey, you know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily feel that my efforts toward you kind of warrant this return from you. A lot of stuff that you're doing my way really hurts me. And what for? What am I doing that is hurting you? You know what I mean? If you have an answer to that, please do share. You know what I mean? I will say that I would say is the thing the most that kind of was the color of that relationship between me and that boy. On his part. And I think guys can really be guilty of that. He just didn't ever speak his piece on the things that I was doing that didn't work for him. But didn't tell me. You know, we just, and if I could sense something, and if I would ask him, everything was always cool. Oh, it's cool. No, I'm cool. It's cool. But clearly we're not, you know what I mean? And so that's just, there's a relationship's best practice tip. It's, you can't have that kind of a deception going on in your relationship because you're not invested in that. You're not, my take from that was that, oh, you're so easily offended and you know exactly what it is on my part that I just did that offended you. And you take it a step further to think like, oh, well, I had to have known that if I did that, that was going to offend you. And so the way you're going to deal with it is now, it's like in your book, you know what I mean? Like you're just keeping a tally in your book of things and we're moving forward in this way where now all of a sudden it's kind of like your attitude toward me is changing, that you are really just kind of tallying up these offenses that you feel are coming my way from you, that though to ask you everything is fine, you know? And that's what Marvin is saying. Let me repeat this. And this is fucked up, and don't do this. Nothing could go wrong, and it seemed everything I did seemed to please you. All the heartaches you hid. Now, my homeboy is saying, and nothing could go wrong. So, like, the things that he did, what were the repercussions for it? There were no punishment repercussions for it. There were no, hey, you just messed up with me, crossed a boundary. That doesn't work for me. I won't accept that type of treatment. I'm not going to take that type of behavior. No, those things weren't coming from that other party's part. obviously, though, Marvin was doing those things that were crossing boundaries, that were not acceptable behavior to her, that were not things that worked for her, and she was not expressing that to him. Nothing could go wrong, and it seemed everything I did seemed to please you with this fool. How did I know what was hurting him? Before I could start to sense it, it did seem like everything was cool. It seemed like we were jiving. It seemed like things were working out. It seemed like everything I did seemed to please him. And then it just finally, it was at this place, like I said, that I could just sense that things were not jiving with that. And to ask him to now finally, you know, approach the subject, going to address this elephant in the room. No, it's cool. Guys, that is so fucked up. Because if those things that are actually going on are your deal-breaking type of things, let it break the deal and walk away, or balls up and address it. You know what I mean? Like, guy or girl, have the balls to address it. There's just, I think having the balls to address something is that you are able to have a difficult conversation, right? Like, you've got to be able to say what you need to say to people and hear what you need to hear from them. And it's like, you know what? I'm sorry. If I'm able to say what I need to say, but you never are, I can't not say what I need to say just because you never will. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's very much doing a disservice to yourself and the other person when you actually have these deal-breaking type of things that are going on, which you feel you are receiving, but you don't communicate that in any way to the other person. It allows that person to have a misconception that nothing could go wrong and everything that they're doing seems to please you. They're not doing these things that don't please you in an intentful way if they have no idea. That's on you. You have to express your needs to people. You just do. Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of setting up a perfect storm, right? It's setting up a perfect storm because let me explain something else that he says. I had skipped over. Most of my life, I had been all alone, and you're so sweet to me. Don't think I'll ever roam. Then one day, as time will pass, I had this feeling our love would last. It's a perfect storm for Marvin. And it's explaining how, we're paused at a minute and 46. The song is 5 minutes and 3 seconds long. It, like I said, it's a full arced story because it's going to explain that kind of coming from this perfect storm. Exactly with me too. It's like I said, you have these glaring, debilitating, unhealed wounds. What was Marvin's? His childhood. The family dynamic. The way that treatment from a parent that makes you feel less than and less than worthy and less than lovable gets into your mind and shapes your view of yourself, which then is the way that you carry yourself and the expectations that you have of what you should receive for yourself. That's like you're fresh out of the house. You're coming into life with those glaring wounds. You're not going to have better success in life and situations than what you're carrying along as you're wounding. You know, you're not going to win that race. So it's like he had this all alone mentality. And you know that that translated to self-worth, lovability, oftentimes, and this is what I will just say I get from Ritz a lot of the time. Ritz writes on like a psychological level, like a psychological diagnosing Marvin level. So he's always giving these really detrimental, not positive, little diagnoses of Marvin. Oh, he was somewhere in... Hold on. Let me give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about here. So in Wikipedia, when I just started looking at the album, so I searched on Wikipedia, here, my dear, and it's down here in I feel like it was in reception. There's these little headings in the Wikipedia article, and it says, you know, author David Ritz, you know, labeled the album as da 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 da. And so it's a perfect example of the way that Ritz is always trying to describe Marvin. And if you're somebody like Marvin, who's coming from a place of feeling all alone from your childhood, big part of that coming from family dynamic, like I said, it translates to low self-worth. You think you're not, you know, very lovable. You don't think you deserve a whole lot out of life. If you start to be surrounded now by somebody who joins in this diagnosis of you and is always critiquing you as being that, and that starts to become your own language to describe yourself. Hold on. Actually, what I'll do is I'm going to look for his name. Okay, here we go. So, music. The title track opens the album, and in the album's liner notes, David Ritz describes Gay's tone in the song as self-serving, self-justifying, and self-pitying. It's like... There was not one descriptor there that was positive. You know what I mean? So when you are already prone to being very self-critical of yourself, just from the lack of self-worth that you're leaving the home with, you know? The time under the parents' roof, you know, what they've instilled into you is these kind of lacking views of yourself. And then you get around other... It's going to be who you draw to you. You're going to subconsciously have those types of beliefs of yourself, even if, like, on the surface and just kind of maybe what you put out is totally opposite of that. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you are just obnoxiously giving an opposite impression of that. That could be the way that life turns out for some people. But deep down inside, you really do have those views of yourself. And if you start to be surrounded by people who kind of agree, they concur, and at every chance that they get, they are using this type of detrimental, oh, you're just this and you're just that and you're, and that, I swear to God, those type of descriptors right there is the gist of what you get from anything that you hear coming from Ritz to describe Marvin. His music, his lyrics, his character, whatever. There are parts of that Richard Olivier movie where, you know, Marvin's just talking about life. And I know they're kind of asking him, they're like, do you think that they miss you in America? And he's like, well, I don't know. He's like, I guess I would hope so. And he's like, maybe I don't deserve to be missed. Maybe I'm spoiled. Maybe I'm this. Maybe I'm that. And it's just like, what I'm saying is, you got the catalog of Marvin Gaye. I think that a very predominant descriptor that you could think of to apply to him is lovable, right? And that's innate in him. Fucked up beliefs about yourself, those can be very man-made and kind of nurtured over time and kind of, you know, just negatively poured into you and kind of kept going in your trying to be hopeful interactions throughout life with toxic people. It's like, it's a perfect storm. It's going to draw that type of situation to you. So in this specific, I met a little girl, you know, he's coming fresh from home. He's meeting Anna, and all of a sudden, you know, he's coming across somebody that is so sweet to him, and it makes him think that he would never want to roam around on her. I mean, he's going to latch onto that, right? It's like you start to get a little bit of a consistent taste of something positive out of somebody else. It's like this perfect storm thing. You are going to latch onto that for dear life. Now, all of a sudden, you are going to put these ultimate goals and ambitions and hopes and expectations into a situation because, good gosh, you, for once in your life, I mean, you're getting this refreshing opposite experience from what has been your norm, from what you have been conditioned to think that you deserve, that you're worth, worthy of. So, you know, he's explaining that. He thought that the love would last. Didn't seem like anything he was doing was wrong, but yet all along here she is just kind of not sharing what she needed to share with him. It's a lot, guys. It's a lot. It's very autobiographical in a very beautiful way, right? It's just down to, again, with these experiences of Marvin's music, when especially he is blatantly singing of his life. He has complete ability to be introspective, you know what I mean? And I think very critical of himself a lot of the time. Like I said, there are some points in this project, multiple points, because it's just a point per song sometimes. Not every song, but in each song that there is a point where it's like, ooh, Marvin. And so that's a little bit of a dig. It's a little maybe snarky. It's a little, like I said in the previous episodes, like you have the nerve, right? Like, and that's human nature, right? Like, that's just when something is so fresh, this was so fresh, right? It's now 40 years later, you know, 40 plus years later, but like this was fresh when it was happening. That's why I'm telling you, when my relationship was fresh at the I Met a Little Girl soundtrack to it stage, for 5 minutes and 3 seconds, I could have a little breakdown. When you're in that too fresh perspective from something, you do not have that eagle's eye view of it. You've got the you can't see the forest for the trees view of it. And so you're going to say what you say in those moments. But 40 years later, it just doesn't even resonate the same. That's why I'm saying, like, sitting here today and just like as I've been listening to this song lately, I can't cry over this anymore. There's no tears to shed. But just kind of on that higher level too, like I say, that relationship, it wasn't worth a lot. I would never categorize it as the love of my life. That man, that boy would not ever be categorized as the love of my life because it's just like the wounding that I had at that time. I was latching onto him for dear life and just trying to expect so much for him to provide to my life to kind of just heal the wound. And that's the thing. It's like the healing of the wound doesn't ever come from something external. It doesn't come from my Mustang. It doesn't come from a man, you know, it comes from internal work that you have to do. And you just have to clear out the things that you've been conditioned to think of yourself. The things that you have just kind of over and over and over again received, and just kind of getting at where does it come from, that somewhere it is subconsciously inside of you, that's what you actually really do believe that you should receive. And you got to fix that. You got to fix the belief that that's what you should be receiving. And, you know, where I'm at right now is like, whew, if the place I can get to is at least understanding the more that I should expect to receive. But like I just said, it's kind of like a plague and a handicap, but I'm not giving it up because it's what I should be expecting to receive. And it's what I should be holding out for to be partnered up with, so that, you know what, if the only thing that you get to in this life is you understand what you're worth, you understand what you deserve, and you don't get to be partnered up with it, oh well, you're not partnered up with the wrong thing. That is the thank you, Jesus, to be about focusing on in gratitude all the time. You know, you be thankful for what you don't have sometimes.
So let me keep listening to this song, because we're going to get a little bit deeper and it'll just be more personal, specific to Marvin and Anna. Oh, Marvin Gaye is such a philosopher. He has that deeper vision, that deeper mindset, thought process towards things, right? That's why I'm saying it's a plague, because it sets you up for having a like-mindedness to thought processes and ways to view things. Let's go to one of the most popular episodes of this series so far, the I Want You episode, where I'm like, there is one line in the song that is the key to life and love. Don't play with something that you should cherish for life. That is a like five levels deeper than the surface viewpoint of how to approach an entire facet of life. Not everybody has the ability to be five levels deeper, okay? Everything that I've just been kind of ranting about, best tip practices and, you know, best practice ways to go about and don't do this and don't do that. Marvin eases up on it quite a bit from where I've just been coming from. And this is what I want to express. And this is why there is no shame in how you have lived life and, you know, how far you have traversed through life with those wounds, just because here's what the key to it is. You do the best you can. Of course, you are doing the best that you can. And like I said, until it is brought to your attention that you have some debilitating wounding, that is always going to be the best that you're able to do as long as you're carrying it along with you unhealed. You're doing the best that you can, and you don't know that you have that. That's why I'm saying, like, when I was 21 and I met this young boy, yeah, I could definitely relate to the most of my life I have been all alone. That had a lot to do with my social peer ability. Never, ever, ever fit in among my peers. Abused by them racially, abused by them emotionally, right? Like, they just, for whatever reason, a lot of the experience of my life, even through to this day, it just kind of is, I step into a room and just based on appearance, right off the bat, I'm receiving a vibe and a treatment that is not nice. You know what I mean? And like way more so when I was younger. Like when I was growing up, a lot of just blatant and overt racism is still really going on in society. And just among my little peers, these were the kids coming from these households where that is what they were being taught. Just the little racist songs that they would sing. The little racist sayings that they would have. I mean, so I have just, yeah, all alone was definitely my experience. It's, you know, I guess I haven't really stated that so far in this song. I've stated it throughout this series, but definitely a line that I relate to as well. And then so my perfect storm circumstances, like I said, of course, I don't know these things. I'm doing the best that I can. I have the highest hopes. I don't realize that the level of success that I will ever achieve with those wounds is only what I'm going to be, you know, capable of receiving with those wounds. Not a whole lot. It's not a very high threshold, people. You know what I mean? You're going to do as well in a race with one leg against Hussein. What is, I don't know that guy's name, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, you are only going to do as well as you are capable of doing with that wounding. So, but you're doing the, you don't know that. You don't even know what that wounding is yet. You can't put your finger on it. You haven't tapped into a higher plane of thinking to just know that it's something that you can heal up and you can move past. And then you can have different expectations of what you should receive. You can change that conditioning. You don't have to think like what seemed to be Marvin's thought process of himself from start to finish. I never really stopped hearing him use this self-deprecating language about himself, that he was spoiled and he was this and he was that. Just these negative descriptors of himself that it's like, Marvin, though, sure, everybody has the good and the bad. But I just don't think that the bad in Marvin Gaye,
was the predominant, and I've said that many times to you guys, was the predominant day in, day out, all day long bullshit that you had to deal with him. You know what I mean? Like, I beg to differ. I just really do. He would not have 20 years worth of catalog of ability to be five levels deeper mindset thinking were he just a piece of shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So he wasn't. And he just wasn't. And maybe if, like, consistently that was your experience with him, there was some type of a dynamic there that didn't conduce between you two. But, you know, oh well, that doesn't sum total him up. So, you know, and I think that that can be the case in most people's lives, right? There can be certain people that you just can't work a situation out with, but it's like, I'm who I am. I'm real getting comfortable with it. So, you know, kind of between me and you, it doesn't work. I'm good with me. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, don't always take upon yourself like all of this punishment of oh, and you know, it's so, yes, kind of what I'm getting from Marvin on pause now at 3:27 is he was just like, you know, once you really loved me and I really loved you, and I really do think like that we are doing the best that we can do with this wounding in place. Yes, we're only going to ultimately have the success ability with it as is possible. We don't even know the very low level that is. We have the highest, doing the best that we can, hopes and expectations of it. We have a good heart. You know what I mean? Anyway, I've got this wounding. I've got this self-belief wounding, but I have high hopes. I give love. I'm worthy of love. You know what I mean? I would like to receive your love. But if, and it really, it's this age old thing. If you can't love yourself, how are you going to love somebody else? I think that really what the truism in that, because I think a lot of people cannot relate to that, but it's, if you don't love yourself, how are you going to receive love from someone else? I really believe that's the statement to say. And then all of a sudden, I think that that can make sense to someone. It's like, if you don't love yourself, you know what? You don't think you deserve love. So how in the world, if you have found this ultimate goals person, but how are you going to receive love from them on a level that you could allow yourself to receive? Do you know what I'm... So, you know, this perfect storm place that he's explained, you know, all of his life he's been all alone. We know the end story of that. Like I said, I think it's just this little teeny tiny half of a sentence, a phrase that is the most autobiographical, him shedding some light on just kind of what that dynamic shaped him to be. And it was from all of childhood through until that last day. It translated into this unending hope, though. It had himself in proximity, never wanting to let go of that hope that someday it could be resolved and that he could just receive the love that he should receive from his parent. And when he comes across, yes, let's put even more of the specifics into place, a 17 years older than him lady who's just loving on him. You know what I mean? He is going to latch onto that for dear life, coming fresh out of his all alone time. But same part of the perfect storm, you know, he's just gulping it up. He's eating up all of this love that he's receiving. But unfortunately, it's being handicapped because for whatever things that he is doing that is crossing boundaries for Anna and is not working for Anna, she's not doing her part to clearly enough express that to him. So he's not aware of the problems that are really underlying, and why would they ever go away? What is he aware of to stop doing? You know what I'm saying? So how is he going to stop doing it? But yeah, it's just going to be the stuff that's festering, right? It's festering. And so he says, you know, once you really loved me, once I really loved you, but then time would change you as time would change me. Now, that was always, when I was that younger age, something that I didn't really ever know if I could relate to. I didn't really ever fathom life at this age when I was that young. Really didn't. And something that, like, I would get from older women that I would, you know, just be venting to or whatever about the relationship struggles. And they would explain, oh, don't worry, there'll come a time you won't even remember that boy's name. Now, honestly, I do have to admit, sometimes nowadays, I'm like, what? I do have to remember his name sometimes. This dude. I never thought that that would be possible, but the time changing me thing that I will, okay, let me explain why I never thought that I would get to the place where I would struggle sometimes to even remember his name is because I never thought that time would change my feelings toward him, that time would change my engagement level in this thing towards him. I never think that I would not be in that thing to win that thing. So I could not relate to being this age that I'm at right now and not being in the exact same emotional, mental boat toward that relationship. That, like, oh my, there's never going to come a time when I won't absolutely want to ultimately be with him. You know what I mean? When he's just not going to be everything to me. And I will never forget his name. You know what I mean? Like, I could never at all relate to that. But that definitely does happen. And things do change. Thank God, you know, things can change. What I would say has changed for me is just my personal awareness of the things that have held me back, and that I have just become more aware of. And it's changed my outlook on how to approach things. Because, you know, I think, like, here's the thing. And I think it maybe is even in this album, a line in this song that time heals all wounds. Marvin says that somewhere. Time heals all wounds. Oh, it's time. Hold on. It's, what does he say? Is it? Jesus said, time will heal all wounds. And so one approach that I have had in life so far is to just, oh, time, you know, I've just got to give it time. So it's like, okay, and maybe I become a little bit of a hermit, you know what I mean? And I'm just holed up, given time away from the situation. Just let time heal these wounds. I can guarantee you, time does not heal wounds. Time helps you to suppress wounds. These elephants in this room are not ever going to not be present until you become your own doctor on them. Your own doctor, your own nurse, your own A-list surgical team, you know what I mean? Like, the best trauma team in the country. You gotta become that for yourself. You have got to heal these. You have to actually work on them to heal them. Time doesn't do it. It does not. Not the level of wounding that I'm talking about. Like, I don't know, maybe time can heal some category and level of wounds. I think it's the physical wounds on our bodies, right? That's not what we're talking about. Time does not heal them. Time suppresses them. And if you kind of take an approach to these wounds that I'm talking about, and you just give it time, and you just kind of step away, like, you don't address it for time. That's when gangrene sets in. You know what I'm saying? These things just, ooh. They're unattended to. It's not healing them. But yeah, thank God that time can change perspectives. And with time, things can heal. I think with, again, if there's a way to say it, with time, things can heal. If you are doing the healing work, healing doesn't happen automatically with time. It's not like getting a cut less severe than needing to go get stitches. And over weeks, you can just see how, you know, the skin just starts to heal itself back up. And maybe you just have a little bit of a scar left at the end of that. And that all just happened on its own. Maybe you put a little bit of Neosporin on it and you just checked it. That actually happened. It healed on its own. This other stuff is not like that. But with time, working on that, healing it, yeah, it can. Absolutely. And, you know, the way that time can change you is that you can have kind of enough experiences carrying these wounds, where I think this is each individual's personal journey, is that you have enough experiences, varied experiences, same wounding, whether you're taking the approach of kind of burying your head in the sand. I think the time heals all wounds approach is kind of just, okay, I've got this wound, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to bury my head in the sand with it for time. So however much time, months, years, I'm going to keep my head buried in the sand to this wound. And I want it to heal that wound, because I'm just not going to look at that wound for that much time. I'm going to let that much time of space be from the situation. And I'm going to, you know, not pick at the wound for this much time, but I'm just completely unattending the wound, burying my head in the sand for time. Well, I took that approach. Don't get it twisted. I definitely took a time heals all wounds approach. And then, you know, so it's like, all right, now it's time to try a new situation. So varied experiences, right? Let me try this new thing and let me try that new thing. And it can actually be, wounding applies to a bunch of different kind of categories of situations too. So it's like, okay, let me try this new thing. Kind of same, ooh. Womp womp result. I mean, you kind of get enough womp womps. And then the thing that can change is your approach and your mindset. And that's what I'm saying. I think it takes as many of those types of situations, and maybe, like in my case, it was an extreme enough of a situation. So very kind of similar and familiar results, but just like amplified to the 10th power of the extreme. And it was just like, wow. Kind of in a negative way, years back, in a critical way, someone had told me, well, you're the common denominator in all of your experiences. And it just was not the time for me to receive that. You know what I mean? I was like freshly trying to, it was in a professional setting, and I was freshly trying to explain to somebody that should have been a resource to me to kind of help brainstorm ways to improve the situation. Kind of like some deal breaking things that were going on in my professional surroundings. And what I was told in the midst of just trying to get some, you know, help with it was that I'm the common denominator to everything that I bring to myself. And like, it was too soon. It was too fresh that I wasn't in the place to receive that information at that point in time, that critique at that point in time. But kind of once it was a very personal, just a love relationship experience, kind of, I think having already years back heard that, in a more critical, not harsh, not nice, not loving way. I was able to grasp that though. You know what I mean? It's like, this is my life. I am the primary character that's in this story. You know what I mean? And if the kind of primary results that I have approaching these situations with the same approach, that approach has got to change. I can't, it's not always, you know, offsetting it to this and that thing. So even again, you know, like just to express, yes, I episode back or so, I was like, the last situation I had was very unhealthy, you know, towards that, via that other person. That person was very unhealthy, and very much so, that is true. There's diagnoses out there. There really are. But again, and so, you know, If that would be your diagnosis, that's your diagnosis, you know what I mean? But I just, it's in my best interest to not try and give it a go with somebody with that type of a diagnosis, you know what I mean? So it's just like, again, it's just more looking internal, and it's like, okay, the proximity thing. It's like, okay, with you, you can't be in my proximity. It's not going to work for me to get successful results having you in my proximity. Like, I just can't do that. I can't do that. The results that I'm only going to get from you with this diagnosis, I can't. It's not for me. That's not what I was put here to receive. It's not my diagnosis. So I've got to change my approach. God bless, you know what I mean? But I've got to change my approach. So, yeah, it's all just to go back to say, of course, we are always doing the best that we can. Okay, so kind of, it wasn't a pausing on Marvin's part. You know, he definitely was giving a description of, you know, we approached the situation doing the best that we could. And there was a time when you really loved me and I really loved you. Then time would change you. Time really changed me. And today, I wonder if you're really even a friend of mine. Now, that's devastating to get to that place. In a situation, and definitely kind of when this song was very soundtrackable for my life, that question with the worry tied to it was definitely the place that the situation had deteriorated to. And I really cared about it. You know what I mean? Like, I really cared about how having to be in a position of wondering if I was viewed as a friend by that person, compared to, because what Marvin says is like, cry, cry, cry. I've done some crying. You've caused my tears to flow. Like, that's really touchy. I'm really affected by Marvin saying that, you know, woman, you have caused my tears to flow. Like, that is so soul bearing, right? Like, that is just so vulnerable. That is so autobiographical. He's just really sharing his side of the story. He was very affected by it, right? He was very touched by the demise of this relationship. And, you know, and then he's like, do you ever think about the type of love that we had? So if you can kind of have had that type of love that we had type of situation, and then you honestly really can get to a place where you wonder, and you really do have to wonder and question if that other person is even able to regard you as a friend, right? It's like, that's devastating, because definitely when it was the time that we had the type of love that we had, you didn't want to get it to a place where you honestly had to wonder if there would come a time that you and that person could even be friends. There was a time that I worried about that. I just personally, and this is just very personally, where I'm at today regarding that situation, I don't care, and we're not friends, and I'm the one that says that. It really just was too many series of disregards from that person, lack of consideration, down to where finally, ultimately, because there is the next song is, when did you stop loving me? When did I stop loving you? And I could never answer that question until finally I got an answer to that question, because there finally, and this just goes to speak to my wounding, it would be kind of similar to Marvin's too. If you're coming through with something of a lack of self-worth, right? So, like I said, if you don't love yourself enough, how are you going to receive love from somebody else? That's the question. It's not how are you going to love somebody else. Actually, it can very unhealthfully be that you don't love yourself, and what you do is you give your love to everything else outside of you. Like, that's actually reality for a lot of people that don't love themselves enough. They find themselves loving other people too much. The real question is, if you don't love yourself, how are you going to allow yourself to be loved by somebody else? How are you going to allow yourself to receive that love from somebody else? How are you going to ever see yourself worthy of, like, really envisioning? It's like, you can't even bring that to fruition if you don't, like, you just can't envision it. You can't see that. You don't see how you're worthy of it. So you're never really going to allow yourself to receive it. In my particular situation with this individual, the thing that finally answered the question for me of when did I stop loving you is that there was a final after more than a decade of knowing this person, plus years, a decade of knowing this person. A family member of mine passed away that person was aware of, that person knew, personally knew, and didn't have a condolence to offer to me about that situation. And so it really took that person disregarding someone outside of me, not just me, because I took the disregard for years. And it was finally when that same disregard was displayed toward outside of me, my family, that was, and without question, hesitation, thinking twice, struggling over it, ever questioning it again, ever looking back on it, ever having a worry if, when Marvin says, today, I wonder if you're a friend of mine, so I don't give a fuck today if you're a friend of mine. You're not my friend. I don't really give a fuck if I'm your friend today, if you would view me as a friend. I don't view you as a friend. You didn't have human being in you. For a very fundamental human being decency, exercise opportunity in life to demonstrate. And, you know, really that thing that you weren't capable of doing that time right there is no different than what you weren't capable of doing toward me for so many years. But it really never resonated until you extended it beyond me. Once I was witnessing it going someplace else, but to my loved ones, oh my gosh, that was it. Without hesitation and question, ever thinking twice and looking back on it, that's when I stopped loving that person. So, yeah, when kind of you don't have enough love for yourself, you can definitely be at risk of loving others too much and kind of accepting too little too much. But it was so eye-opening to me. Like, I always have just marveled at that. It's like, wow. Without even 2 seconds of no thinking of how I needed to handle that situation, like the complete right out of my life that person had to receive via his conduct like that, it was just like, wow. But it took someone, not me, but that I very much loved and lost, and he knew. Wow, it was that. So yeah, there was a time fresh out of the situation with the way that it had gone down, everything had gone down, where, yeah, very close to the end of the 5 minutes and 3 seconds, like the breakdown just really, oh, the tears are just really flowing at that point, right? Because you can really be worried sometimes if someone is still your friend. But then too, it can just be the most healthy thing when you don't care anymore. And again, it's about putting these really secure boundaries around your well-being, people. And so translated with that, though, doesn't have to include, oh, I wish bad things for you. I don't wish you to... It's nothing like that. Like, it doesn't extend beyond my boundary. Like, what's inside of my boundaries is me. And I need, like, not toxic things like that inside of these boundaries with me. So whether I'm not letting you put your toxic shit inside of my boundaries, I also don't want to have toxic shit of my own that just flows as far as my boundary. You know what I mean? So it's like, I definitely don't translate. People that are having to be beyond my boundaries right now is not correlated to, oh, I want to have you experience something. Like, not at all. You can't. You're not going to. Here's what I saw on YouTube just really quickly, because I'd heard about it on Hot Topics. Let me explain. This is now just a very little personal tidbit. I refuse to watch news. I don't do that. I don't watch local news. I don't watch world news. I can't handle that. They fashion it in a way to just be. I will tell you, I was trying to watch the weather one day, And they always blend the weather into a very strategic point in the newscast, my local news here. You know, cause there's, you want to know what the weather is and, but you gotta just, you're gonna sit through a lot of other shit before you can just get what you need for the weather and then click out. So I had kind of, I planned it right. It was like, okay, I know they usually don't play the weather until probably about 13, 14, 15 minutes. So I didn't check until then. So I clicked over and I was able to start right at the weather. I'd missed a little bit of the first few seconds of it, but then I got my little weather forecast. And then right away, though, they just keep it flowing. So as soon as they were done with the weather, they come in and it was something about like, well, times maybe, it may be a really festive time of year for most of us right now, but there are some of us that are just plagued with, you know, and horrible diseases. And I was just like, oh my gosh, just like the segues, right? Like the segue. I was like, I have got to change. I just can't deal with it. I cannot handle the news. So I don't watch the news. So like, I don't stay up on that shit. And like I said, I could give a fuck about politics, and that seems to be what is dominating the news most of the time. So I, no. But I was watching Wendy, and she just very, she was like, and so the UPS driver, and that was all she said. She didn't give any detail about it. And I was like, well, what the fuck happened to a UPS driver? I didn't even know what that story was. So then it's just been a couple days here. There was a little tidbit on it, and it was the local news down where that happened. So I guess it was down in Miami. Some robbers had robbed a jewelry store. Then they hijacked the UPS truck, and then they got into a shootout, and the UPS driver got killed. And I think they had taken a hostage, and the hostage got killed too. Like, it was just horrible, just for doing his job. But then they were interviewing the stepdad of the UPS driver that got killed, and the dad was just saying that that driver had actually covered for somebody that day. That was somebody else's shift. That person called out sick. And so this guy that got killed, he went in to cover a shift, you know, on his day off, went in helping out his coworker, handling the shift. And then all of the shit went down. And so the boy that called out came up to the stepdad and was like, you know, I was the one that called out. That should have been me that all of this happened to. And the stepdad said, you know, no. And he's like, this was the way I could think of to comfort him. He's like, we all have an internal clock. And only God knows when it's time to stop that clock. So, you know, this didn't have anything to do with you. And he was like, that's the only way that I could think of to comfort him. But what I think a lot of the time too, and I hope this, I mean, I would just hope this. It's like, say you are struggling for a little bit of time with some toxicity flowing inside of your own boundaries, right? Like it is coming from you. And it's trapped inside of your boundaries. It's like, I don't think that it's at that time that it's your time to go to God. You know what I mean? I don't think that if that's kind of what you've got going on and you're struggling with that, I don't think that it's your time to leave yet. You know what I mean? You want to get to a better place than that by the time it's time for you to not be here anymore. So just try and work that out. Always be trying to work that out. And like I said, correlate that to you are not extending that out beyond your boundaries. You're not wishing that out to anybody else. So I've just listened to the song. I actually paused it right now at 5 minutes because, you know, this is the dick for this song. This was a very, you know what, before I get into the dig, I will just say this was a very maturely handled song, you know. It was very much Mervyn's perspective because, you know, what he didn't add or give to us is a description of what all the heartache that Anna hid. He didn't explain to us what the heartache that Anna hid was, so that therefore they were these things that he was doing that were beyond her boundaries. Like, he didn't go into what those things were that he did beyond Anna's boundaries that she didn't make him aware of. But he provided his side of the story that, you know, that's kind of, it was a detriment to us. Like, it seemed like everything pleased you. How did I know any different if you didn't tell me? It was a maturely handled song. Cause like I said, he just goes into explaining to, like, we were doing the best that we could. And once I really did love you, and once you really did love me, and we were doing the best that we could with this thing. you know, and that right now I wonder if you're a friend of mine. That is a true statement. That's a vulnerable statement to make. You know, if you say that and you are worried, possibly, you know, you do know your own actions that could contribute to you having to worry about whether or not that person can view you as a friend. That's owning that to a degree. That's owning that. You know what I mean? But the only part, let's just song for song, let's remember Anna's listening experience to this. She's sitting in Marvin Gaye's studio by herself. Art Stewart is, hopefully, like I said, I hope Art Stewart pushed play and left the room and let her be there by herself to be hearing this. Hold on, I'm trying to get into the book. I shouldn't need to worry about doing this, but... Okay, An Inspired Divorce. There's a chapter in here. And I do know it's in this book. Where did I just skip it? I think I went... Okay, Inspired Divorce. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, when he was through and wanted Anna to hear the record. Ba-da-da-da-da. Okay. Yep, okay, there it is. So in this whole entire book, and there is a whole entire chapter, I just read three sentences that explain this. So yes, and it is exactly what I've told you before, with one little tidbit that it just included. So Marvin thought he was done with this project, right? Now, before it's getting released, before he's handing it over to Motown to get it pressed out onto records, Anna, he calls her in to listen to it at his studio. Art Stewart sets it up. He gets a plane for her in the control room. Marvin is upstairs. Doesn't ever come down to see her, though. And she sat there and listened. She didn't say much. And then she just left after it was done. But, okay, so that's the perspective. Like, get excited about new songs maybe that you've slept on this album. From the excitement that I share them with you. But keep the perspective throughout this project of listen to the song, be in Anna's shoes. You're hearing the song for the first time. This is your divorce settlement arrangement with you and Marvin. This is written for you. This is about you and him. And the song had been handled maturely. But for like the last 20 seconds of the song, he is just like a little choir. Beautiful. Sounds absolutely beautiful. But he's saying, hallelujah, hallelujah, I'm free. It's too soon, Marvin, that's too soon. I don't need to hear that. I don't know if you ever need to hear that, you know? Ouch. So that's the dig in this song. There was a dig in the song before. Like I said, it's not like songs from start to finish are full of the dig, but there's digs in songs throughout this project. And it's fresh, it's new, it's right what's going on, real time right then and there. This is how we're ending this thing. I'm speaking my piece. I'm speaking my truth. Are parts of it going to hurt you? Yes. 43? Is that where we're at? It's getting ready to be 43. Right now it's 42 years down the line. Geez. You know, it's that many years that we're separated now and maybe we are friends now. Maybe today, 42 years down the line, I don't worry if you're a friend of mine. And I can hear you singing hallelujah that you're free. And, you know, it was for the best. It was for the best. And maybe that's just where we can leave it, you know, and we're friends. That can happen. Time changes things, right? It can change things. It doesn't necessarily heal it. But it can change it, and it can give you the time to work on the healing of it. Okay, guys, that is I Met a Little Girl. Next song in line, When Did You Stop Loving Me? When Did I Stop Loving You? Take care. Bye-bye. Well, friends, that's it for this episode.
Did we have fun? I had fun. Subscribe to our show so you never miss the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye. Follow us on Pinterest, pinterest.com/MarvinGaye_enduring_gifts. There, we are up to 45,000 views per month. I have thousands of images and videos of Marvin. Also, check out the YouTube channel, Marvin Gaye's Enduring Gifts. I'm building the Song of the Day playlist there. It's my ultimate goal to become your free online Marvin Gaye listening resource. So, as always, we really appreciate your listening support. Give us subscribes, give us likes, and thank you for listening.